Welcome to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our new listeners to the show and let you know what you're in for. Common Sense Preparedness was designed to give the American public the much-needed information on how to manage and respond to any type of disaster we might face, natural, man-made, or personal. We will not tell you who to vote for or when the world is going to end, but we will get you ready to face that if it does happen. We will talk about first aid, CPR, tornadoes, earthquakes, how to prepare a family emergency plan, how to develop an emergency communication plan, how to hunt, how to fish, how to make a fire. This show will be hosted by myself, Tim Howard, and various guests from around the world who will share their information and their experiences with us. My credentials? They're pretty extensive, with over 25 years field experience as a chemical biological warfare instructor, a firefighter, an area safety manager, a safety inspector. I have been associated with various federal, state, and local governments. Currently, I'm associated with the FEMA think tank, OSHA field councils, and I am your host for the show. Before we go any further, any information that you hear on this program or find on hesafety.org or the radio website at csp.hesafety.org is to be taken as informational only. We are not legal or medical advisors. We are here to get you to think about things and get you to do your own research. Talk with your professional legal and medical advisors. Because in the end, it's all common sense anyway, which you have. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to the show. Common Sense Preparedness website, csp.hesafety.org, has been designed to give you more information about subjects than we can give you in a single broadcast. The website is free, so come on by and begin your research with Common Sense Preparedness. You can also listen or download previous shows via the website. I do ask you to sign up, though. Reason being, it's just so I can judge how well the show is doing. Also, please, show some love to our sponsors. They're the ones that keep the show and the websites free of charge. At the end of the day, it all comes down to this: how many lives we save. It is sad to hear of any life being lost when it was avoidable. Remember, a wise man prepares for the darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Tune into Common Sense Preparedness at csp.hesafety.org.
Welcome to Common Sense Preparedness. With your host, my grandpa, Tim Howard.
Since it's that time of season again, let's talk a little bit about pandemics. The last pandemic we had was a fiasco. So with a little knowledge and education, maybe we can avoid all the misconceptions. Well, what is a pandemic? A pandemic, defined by Webster, is occurring over a wide geographical area and affecting an especially high portion of the population. Now, a little bit of history about the pandemics. The first recorded pandemic in history was the Polynesian War Pestilence of 430 BC. During the Polynesian War between Athens and Sparta, it wiped out over 30,000 citizens of Athens, roughly two-thirds of the population. Then there was the Antonio Plague of 165 AD. Historians now believe it was caused by smallpox. At the height of the disease, it was killing 5,000 people a day in Rome. By the time the disease had run its course, some 15 years later, a total of 5 million were dead. Then there was the plague of Justina, 541 AD. It was a deadly disease of the Byzantine Empire. At the height of the infection, it killed 10,000 people in Constantinople every day. With that kind of high numbers, there was no room or time to bury the dead, so they were just left out in the open, which causes other diseases. By the end of the outbreak, nearly half the inhabitants of the city were dead. Historians believe that this outbreak decimated up to a quarter of the human population in the eastern Mediterranean area. So who was the culprit? The bubonic plague. And that came back in the 1500s, known as the Black Death. It took a heavy toll in Europe. The fatalities were recorded at over 25 million people, or one-fourth of the entire population. Without treatment, the bubonic plague will kill about half of those infected within 3 to 7 days. Now, one of the worst pandemics we ever had was the Spanish flu of 1918. This deadly virus was identified in a U.S. military camp in Kansas. 6 months later, it was worldwide. When the Spanish flu pandemic was over, about 1 billion people had caught the disease, about half the world population at the time. It is perhaps the most lethal pandemic in history of mankind because between 20 and 100 million people were killed. That was more than the number of World War I itself. The culprit for the Spanish flu was H1N1. Now, as you can see, when H1N1 reared its ugly head in 2009, everyone panicked. It was the same strain as the Spanish flu of 1918. However, because of today's telecommunications, internet, being able to get the word out there, and more education, the worldwide death toll for the H1N1 of 2009 was only 14,286. You see, pandemics are preventable, but a lot of people do not understand how to prevent it. Why do we panic? Think about this. If we have a 30% death rate, which is what H1N1 usually has, what would that mean in today's numbers? Well, in America alone, that would have been 90 million Americans dead in 6 months. 90 million. I know, it just sounds like numbers, but think about it. What would happen if we lost 90 million Americans in 6 months? Well, like the other plagues, there's not going to be enough time to bury the dead, so we have open mass graves, burning bodies. The U.S. mortuary system can't handle that. And who's the first ones to catch it? The medical profession. So there goes the hospitals. No medical treatment. Fire, police, they're going to break down. They're going to catch it. So you got no law enforcement, no fire safety, no EMS. Then the public service is going to start to break down. No utilities, electric, gas, sewer. Also, without law enforcement, prisons have got to open up their gates. So all the prisoners come out. Now you've got roving bandits. So this is the world you have with only 90 million Americans dead. Total breakdown. Chaos. So what are you going to do in this? You going to live off that noisy generator that you have? How are you going to refuel it? Sorry, with no power, there's no pumps, so you can't go down to the local store and get gas. Then there's the bandits to face. The one thing I do know, and I've heard the story before, oh, I've got guns, I've got enough ammunition. No, you don't. Just by sheer numbers, they'll take whatever you have away from you. And that can include your loved ones. Think about it. If you have dreams of running and gunning like Rambo, well, guess what? You've lost the battle. Somebody's going to get off that lucky shot, and then you're dead. In a crisis like that, camouflage and concealment is your best friend. So what was the difference between the Spanish flu and the H1N1 of 2009? Education. You see, H1N1 was nothing more than a virus, just like the flu. The difference was education. We were able to get the information out there as fast as we could, and people were receptive to it. What I thought was funny, I noticed in my classes, my CPR and disaster preparedness classes went from 3 to 4 people per class to standing room only as soon as the pandemic hit. Everyone got nervous, wanted to know more about it. So we were able to get the information out there. And that was the key here. And I think all of our future pandemics, that will be the key, is information. Information is power. But we didn't do quite enough. I know a lot of people say we went overboard. We scared everybody for nothing. No, we didn't. Because had that thing really hit us, and people started getting sick and dropping dead, what would have happened? Could you have taken care of a sick loved one in your family, in your house? Do you have isolation protocols in place in your emergency plans for a sick child? Or are you just going to leave her outside and let her fend for herself when she's sick and contagious? We have to think about that kind of stuff. I know for me, my personal emergency plan, it calls for my master bedroom to be the isolation room. Why? It has a bathroom with it. Not only does it have TV and entertainment, it has a bathroom. Plus we had tarps waiting to go for isolation, a supply of N95 masks, prior to the pandemic? Because if you notice, with the pandemic hit, you couldn't find an N95 mask. Do you know where to buy one? Yeah, your local hardware store. It's called a dust mask. What a lot of people found out at that time was they were ill-prepared to face a pandemic. They weren't even sure what a pandemic was. They learned real quick. So these are the stuff we have to put into our emergency kits. A supply of masks. Know how to use one. Do you know how to fit test one? Real quick and easy. You cover it. You inhale or exhale. You should feel the mask collapse. If it does not collapse or expand, then you have an air leak. And it's not going to do you any good. Can you use an N95 mask more than once? Yes, you can, as long as it doesn't get wet or it's not written on. Sometimes you'll see the doctors go walking around with an N95 mask on, especially the duckbills. You'll have eyes and a mouth on it. Well, guess what? That N95 is now useless. The material has been breaking down from the ink. What about gloves? Do you have rubber gloves at home? And I'm not talking the three pairs that come with most basic first aid kits. I'm talking 100 pair, because you're going to need them. Anytime you go visit a sick child who's contagious, you're going to have to change a pair of gloves. What happens if a pair of gloves rips? Do you know how to handle that situation? And you don't know how to handle any of it until you practice it. I know during the H1N1 scare, one of my daughters came down with a high fever. See, that was the killer there. Out of all of it, the main concern was the high fever. At 105, you boil your brain. So you have to bring that fever down. You have to monitor it every hour. My one daughter came down with 104. So how do you bring down a high fever? Submerge them in ice. Prepare for shock. Plenty of fluids. See, when you have a high fever situation, fluids is what's key to prevent dehydration. See, all this works together, and we weren't prepared for that. Most people did not have a family emergency plan ready for that kind of stuff. So the H1N1, did we go overboard? Yeah. But it was a good practice. Because you know what? H1N1 was a walk in the park. 30% death rate is a walk in the park. Look at some of the things we have out there nowadays. Bird flu, SARS, 60% death rate. And that's airborne. You need an N95 mask. MRSA. Have you heard about MRSA? Now, the best way I can describe MRSA to you, now this is not in medical terminology, it's the cooties. Remember when we were kids, we were taught girls have cooties, boys have cooties? It's the cootie. We have bacteria that lives on us normally. His job is to eat off bacteria. With all these antibacterial soaps and hand wipes and all that stuff, he has nothing more to eat. He starts to eat us. Now, MRSA is deadly when he gets to the blood or bones. And it starts as an abscess. Most people don't understand what the abscess is. They ignore it until it's too late. MRSA has a death rate of 50 to 80%. 50%, now that's the low end, 50% of Americans dead from MRSA. You look at 150 million people. How to prevent MRSA? Wash your hands. Soap and water, wash your hands. Can you catch MRSA? Oh yes, you need rubber gloves. So you have to educate yourself on all the diseases that are out there. They got one out there right now. They haven't even named it. They just call it NDM1. Nondescript Medical 1. 100% death rate. And you'll notice we haven't even touched all the chemical warfare or biological warfare agents like ricin or anthrax. They have higher death rates. They're designed to kill. They even have weapons out there nowadays called DNA bombs. They're designed to kill certain types of people. So we have a whole gamut of things we have to worry about. But what you need to do is you need to have an emergency plan, and pandemics have to be involved with it. How to effectively isolate a person. How to care for that isolated person. What kind of equipment do you need to face this? So all emergency plans need to address a pandemic. Because you know what? It's right around the corner again. Now, HESafety.org, Common Sense Preparedness, has on its website information on pandemics, isolation protocols, and stuff like that. Go ahead and check out the website. and then do your own research. Find out what you need for your family. You're listening to Ancient Safety's Common Sense Preparedness American Readiness Program. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors. Common Sense Preparedness brought to you in part by PatriotMusic.com.
America has known the world over for its passion for freedom and individual rights. If you love your country as much as I do, and if you'd like to hear great music inspiring this passion, check out PatriotMusic.com. Download music from three great albums, including a new album to be released in January with a cover you won't forget. PatriotMusic.com.
Hi, this is Matt Fitzgibbons with PatriotMusic.com. You're listening to Common Sense Preparedness with Tim Howard.
This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operations Team, preparing one person, one community, and one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support for the healthcare and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier. Let's go ahead and talk about the common cold for a little bit. Each year, billions of people catch the common cold, making the common cold virus the most common infectious disease known to man. You know what? This virus is extremely treatable and avoidable. We just need to take the time to understand it and how to avoid its transmission. It's estimated that an average U.S. adult typically has 2 or 4 colds a year, while children can have up to 12 a year. Now, there's multiple viruses out there, common cold, influenza, pneumonia, etc. You must know what you have in order to treat it. There's a chart on HESafety.org, Common Sense Preparedness website, that can help you determine this. However, before we go any further, I want to advise you, the information that you're going to hear about, or you might see on the website, is to educate you. It is not meant as medical advice. If you want medical advice, please consult your physician. Also, consult your physician before attempting any treatment that you may hear on this broadcast or find on the website. However, I will tell you this. Your doctors are your advisors. They're not gods. They have the training and they have the experience to advise you of certain situations. Always ask questions. You know your body more than anybody else. You know your body better than everybody else, including your doctors. So if it doesn't sound right, don't do it. Now, there's a widespread misconception that the common cold is caused by bacteria. It's not. The common cold is actually triggered by a virus, which means antibiotics are absolutely useless in treating the common cold. Now, one of the things you need to know in order to combat the common cold is how is it transmitted, the flu transmission. The most common way that you can contact a virus is by hand-to-hand contact or some type of physical contact. Now, hand-to-hand contact does not mean shaking someone's hand always. If the person with the flu virus on their hands touches a shopping cart, a doorknob, or something like that, and you follow right behind them and touch that, you now have the flu virus on your hand. So that's hand-to-hand contact. Studies have shown that most common flu viruses can live on pens, keyboards, coffee mugs, for up to hours, and on a person's hand for even double that time. So you can see, coming in contact with the flu, it's almost a guarantee you will, but you need to stop its transmission in order to prevent it. So how do we stop transmission? Well, what we have to understand is the flu is different than the common cold. The common cold transmission route is from hand to mouth, hand to face, where the flu is an airborne particle. And you inhale that through the nose and the mouth. So you must stop transmission rate. To stop the common cold, wash your hands all the time. If you have it on your hands, you can transmit it to your mouth. you can transmit it to your eyes. And if you don't believe me, take a look the next time you're not thinking about things and see how many times you touch your face with your hands. I know when I'm in a lecture or something, I always keep my hands on my face. That's a big no-no. If you have not washed your hands, then you have a problem. Now, influenza is airborne. What will stop influenza is, one, don't put your hand by your mouth or nose, and two, wear an N95 mask. That stops the particles from getting inhaled. That also works with the bird flu and SARS. Now, one of the things we want to do during flu season, besides not touching our face, is we want to get into a habit of doing what they call the vampire cough or the elbow sneeze. The CDC and the American Red Cross have come out with these two items. And what it is basically you're going to cough and you're going to sneeze into your elbow, the crooks of your elbow. This way, if you have any viruses or germs in your cough, it's going to stop at your elbow and on your clothing. When you wash your clothing, you're fine. It's dead. It's only going to last there for a couple hours anyway, so you should be fine. Don't use your elbow to wipe your face. That would not be good. That would just transmit it. Now, there's a video up on the website at hesafety.org that you can check out, and it'll show you how to do this vampire cough or elbow sneeze. Now, the germs, both influenza and the common cold, what they like to do is they like to get into the mouth and the nose and the eyes. Tear ducts connect to the nasal pharynx, if I'm pronouncing that right. And that's the sweet spot. That's the spot in the back of your throat where your nose, your tear ducts, and your mouth connect. Once you get the cold in there, the virus or the common cold in there, if your immune system is not up, you're going to catch it. However, if your immune system is at its peak, then you have a chance of beating this. Now, one thing I want to bring to you about the viruses and the common cold is there's over 200 viruses that make up the common cold. And they're all called rhinoviruses. Rhino being the root word, which means nose. It travels through the nose. Its preferred travel method is through the nose. So let's say we get it in the nose, in the mouth. It's in that sweet spot. It's in the nasal pharynx. How do we stop it? Well, if you have a good immune system and it's not compromised, you should be able to beat this. But what compromises the immune system? Eating too much sugar and or too many grains, not getting enough rest, and I think everybody gets not enough rest. When was the last time you had 8 to 10 hours of sleep? Using insignificant strategies to address emotional stressors in your life. When was the last time you were not under stress? And a vitamin D deficiency. A lot of people, believe it or not, have a vitamin D deficiency, and that's a major cause of the common cold, or a combination of any of the five items we just talked about. Okay, so now you think you've got the cold. What are we going to do? Well, one, avoid touching your face, especially your eyes and nose, at all times. Wash your hands all the time, as much as possible. Carry hand sanitizer with you. Try not to touch public surfaces. If you do, use your hand sanitizer or wash your hands. Remember we were talking about how the germs can get on your hands and into your mouth. Get serious about sanitation. Dispose of dirty tissues promptly. The cold virus can live on them for several hours. Use hand sanitizers as much as you can. There is a homemade hand sanitizer solution on the website that you can check out. Get plenty of sleep. The more rest you get, the better your body will be able to fight off any kind of cold. Use oil of oregano. Oil of oregano is rich in vitamins and minerals and is said to reduce pain and inflammation. The second you start to feel run down, you want to pop an oil of oregano pill twice a day between meals. Optimize your vitamin D levels. Vitamin D influences many different tissues and affects a large number of different diseases because it regulates about 3,000 genes in your body. Vitamin D helps regulate your ability to fight infection, including the flu. 5 studies show that the higher the vitamin D levels lowers your risk of contracting the cold, flu, or other respiratory tract infections. We have a link on the website for more information on this. Optimize your insulin and leptin levels. Consuming grains and sugars increases your insulin and leptin levels, which contributes to premature aging and makes you more prone to disease. So you want to bring that down a bit. Exercise on a regular basis. Exercise is very, very important to the body. It gets all the body juices flowing and your heart pounding. In one study, exercise was shown to lower the risk of having a cold by 50%, and those who caught the cold, it lowered the severity by 31%. Eat most of your food raw. Americans are fond with processed food, but that contributes to epidemics of chronic and degenerative diseases, including numerous colds and the flu. Consuming food in its natural state, whole, unprocessed, and uncooked, provides your body with optimum nutrition. You gotta remember, we were designed to eat raw food. Also, practice stress management. Stress is the number one killer. It's a silent killer, because we all gotta go through stress. It's how you handle it that makes the difference. One simple treatment you can try that is surprisingly effective against upper respiratory infection is hydrogen peroxide. Many people have had remarkable results, curing a cold and the flu within 12 to 14 hours. When they administer a few drops of 3% hydrogen peroxide into each ear, you'll hear some bubbling, which is completely normal, and feel a slight stinging sensation. Now, wait until the bubbling and stinging subsides, normally about 5 to 10 minutes, then drain it to a tissue and repeat in the other ear. They're saying they've had some remarkable results to decrease the flu to 12 to 14 hours. Also, you want to avoid taking over-the-counter pain relief medication as well. Studies have shown people who take aspirin and Tylenol suppress their body's ability to produce antibodies to destroy the cold virus. Now, it only works with the cold virus, not the flu. So your body will produce its own antibodies. You need them to fight off the cold. All right, now, you've caught the cold, okay? Your immune system was down, you've caught it. How long is it going to last you? Most uncomplicated colds last between 8 to 9 days, but about 25% of them last 2 weeks, and 5 to 10% of them last 3 weeks. So up to 3 weeks. Now, if it lasts more than 3 weeks, now it's time to go see a doctor and find out what's going on. You could have a case of allergies or other things. And how quickly you bounce back from a typical cold is defined by you and your collective lifestyle habits. It does not mean popping over-the-counter pills, cough and cold remedies, or fever reducers. In fact, as long as your temperature remains below 102, there's no need to lower it. Cold viruses do not reproduce at high body temperatures, so a slight fever should help you get rid of the virus quicker and make it feel much better sooner. Some first aid for the common cold. Occasionally, you're going to get the cold, so you need to know how to treat this. 1. Go to bed. Plenty of rest. When you're sleeping, this is when your body repairs itself. It is also the time for your body to fight off the common cold. While you sleep, your body recharges your immune system, which is what fights off the cold. People who get 8 or more hours of sleep increase their resistance to cold viruses and get better faster when they do catch the cold. Drink plenty of water or tea, juice, and clear broth. Fluids help your body heal from a cold by loosening congestion and preventing dehydration. Number one killer is dehydration. Water, juice, clear broth, or warm lemon water with honey are the best fluids to rely on. Alcohol, caffeine, and coffee, and caffeinated sodas, man, it only makes your dehydration worse. Also, cheer up with chicken soup. Yeah, believe it or not, chicken soup. Recent studies that tested the effectiveness of chicken soup discovered that it seems to relieve cold and flu symptoms. Scientists believe chicken soup acts as an anti-inflammatory by helping the movement of cells for the immune system to mount the body's inflammatory response. Hot chicken soup also temporarily speeds up the movement of mucus through the nose, helping relieve congestion and limiting the amount of time viruses are in contact with the lining of the nasal passage. And no, it doesn't have to be homemade. Researchers have found out it doesn't matter, homemade or store-bought. It's the broth and it's the steam that helps you. When you get a sore throat, make sure you gargle. Dissolve a half a teaspoon of salt in an 8-ounce glass of warm water and gargle with it to temporarily relieve a sore, scratchy throat. And the reason this home remedy works is that the sore throat occurs when the throat tissues become inflamed with bacteria or germs. This inflammation takes the form of tiny fluid-filled bumps. The dehydration action of the salt draws out the fluid, killing the bacteria, which requires a warm, moist environment to survive. Now here's another one. Irrigate your nose with saline. It's called a neti pot. What I will tell you is this. Any work that you do with a neti pot, first it's got to be distilled water. Not regular tap water. It's got to be distilled water. They've had some problems with neti pots lately. So before you do any kind of neti pots, do your research, talk to your doctor, and from what my research has shown, it has to be distilled water. Another trick for a first aid bag for common colds and flus, moisten the air with a humidifier. Cold viruses are happiest in dry environments, which is one reason colds are most common in the wintertime. Dry air also dries out the mucous membranes, which can both contribute to the stuffy nose and scratchy throat, and lessen the body's ability to fend off the cold viruses. Run a humidifier to add moisture to the indoor air. And it doesn't matter if it's cold or warm. Just gotta put some water in the air. Also, one last thing I want to say is use alternate remedies cautiously. Talk with your doctor, get his advice, but vitamins and herbal medicines have little evidence to show that these work. So be very careful. Although some studies of vitamin C, garlic, zinc, and herbal combinations in airborne form have suggested promising results, most have shown little or no effect, but they can't hurt either. One of the simplest and most inexpensive vitamins that prove to boost immune functions is vitamin D. So you want to beef up on your vitamin D. Now, what are you going to do when a cold does not leave you in 3 weeks? When are you going to go over your checklist? Typically, what have you done wrong? Anything through? Did you try and skip a step? If you have, try and redo the checklist. If you've done it all, get to a doctor. Talk to a doctor. Let him see your symptoms. You might have underlying conditions. Also, through all of this, the one thing you want to watch out for is breathing problems. If you start to have a respiratory problem, you can't breathe, immediately get to the hospital. Without breathing, you're gonna die. So that is the number one thing you want to keep, is your breathing going. If you have problems breathing, get to the hospital. If you suspect pneumonia, be sure to see a doctor and get checked out. Symptoms to watch out for pneumonia, fast, shallow breathing, the feeling of not being able to draw enough breath, chest pains, coughing and wheezing that won't stop, severe vomiting, signs of dehydration such as dizziness when standing, or decreased urination, blue or purple discoloration around the mouth, mental confusion that wasn't present before the illness, convulsions and seizures. You have any of them, get to the hospital. You have pneumonia. And I know I hear a lot of people get walking pneumonia and pneumonia. These can be life-threatening situations, so get to the hospital right away. You're listening to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors. Common Sense Preparedness brought to you in part by PatriotMusic.com.
Hi, this is Matt Fitzgibbons from PatriotMusic.com. I'm proud to announce the release of a new CD of original rock in January that celebrates individual liberty and the principles that made our republic great. Come give a listen to the music. We've got free videos, radio, TV, and podcast interviews, and an album cover you'll be thinking about for years. And don't forget to check out the Take Action section, where you can share your ideas on how to put America back on track. PatriotMusic.com.
Emergencies happen every day. Are you prepared for a crisis? HE Safety can help. Together we'll prepare for natural and man-made disasters, medical emergencies, extreme weather, and other safety-related issues. It all happens on the Common Sense Preparedness Show, hosted by Tim Howard of HE Safety Consultants.
Now here's an awesome song from Matt Fitzgibbons and Patriot Music, called They Can't Take That Away From You. Check out the video at youtube.com. Awesome video.
It comes with every walk of life, from the homeless to a prince. Say it's been a long, long time that we haven't earned it since. It guides the heart, fills the soul, it teaches to be true. They can't take like ours. They can change or just ignore. They're declaimed by every soul, like so many did before. I can see it in your eyes, but it depends on what you do.
Talk about an emergency kit. Emergency kits have a lot of names associated with them. Ready kits, good bags, which means you get out of Dodge quick, bug out bags, bug out kits, etc. You know, it doesn't really matter what you call them, but you must have one prepared. Assemble supplies you might need in an evacuation. Store them in an easy to carry container such as a backpack or a duffel bag. You know, I love seeing Hollywood portray an evacuation with people carrying suitcases. Come on. Think about it. It's time to evacuate. Are you going to grab that bulky, oversized suitcase? I can't see anybody lugging a suitcase more than 200 feet. I know me. If he gets to 200 feet, even with the wheels on that suitcase, it would be on the ground, and I'd be telling everyone, get what you need, and everything else stays. Sorry, you should have planned better. You should have multiple kits. A kit for each of your automobiles and trucks, and one for each member of the group. Get children involved. Children love to pack their own kits. It makes it personal to them. Now, granted, you have to monitor what they pack. But remember, a certain amount of toys is necessary in an emergency situation for the child. It's a way for them to relax and de-stress. Something that's familiar to them. One or two of their favorite toys works wonders in an emergency situation. The best thing to consider here is that they're the ones that have to carry their own bags, and let them know that. And ask them a question. Do you really want to lug that Wii system around with you? Hopefully they'll say no. But you can also guide them into that. Before we get into supply lists, I want to take this opportunity to express to you that I've done a lot of research into supply lists, and I have realized they're all strictly suggestions. Everyone has their own opinion on what they think you should need. It means that everyone has a different idea. The main point here is that you must make your own decisions based on your group's needs and the location you are at. However, here is HE Safety list of items to pack and store. 1. You're definitely going to need a supply of water. Count on 1 gallon per person per day. Now, this water will be used for hygiene, drinking, and sanitation. Store water in sealed, unbreakable containers. Identify the storage date and replace it every 6 months. A supply of non-perishable package or canned foods and a non-electric can opener. I can't count how many times I've gone into the field with my emergency supplies and get out there and realize I forgot the can opener. Make sure you have that. Have a change of clothing, rain gear, and sturdy shoes. Blankets and sleeping bags. Don't worry about pillows. Your extra clothing will make an excellent emergency pillow. Now, if you really want to spoil yourself, there is inflatable pillows out there in the market. They are light and easy to carry. I know I got two in my backpack. Also, you're going to need a first aid kit and prescription medication. If you haven't taken a first aid course yet, take a first aid manual. They are kind of bulky to carry. But you need to know how to use that first aid kit. And you need to be familiar with what's in that first aid kit. Also, you're going to need an extra pair of eyeglasses. Now, I know for myself, if I lose my eyeglasses, I'm blind, so I need an extra pair. A solar power or hand crank radio and flashlight. You're also going to need some credit cards and cash. Now, let's not get crazy on the cash. In an emergency situation, people are going to get funky, and you can lose your cash real quick. Also, an extra set of car keys. The car is going to be invaluable during an emergency situation for places to stay, shelter, power, stuff like that. You always want to have an extra set to where you can always get into that car. Now, here's a new one. A thumb drive or an external hard drive, and they contain copies of important documentations, your wills, home deeds, marriage license, birth certificates, divorce decrees, a list of family doctors, special medical devices such as pacemakers, style and serial number, and your financial records. One of the lessons we learned in Katrina was it was very difficult for people to identify what property they owned without their deeds. If you have a photocopy or a scanned copy on a thumb drive, you can easily access that documentation. There will be computers available, so you can always access that. Also, I know in my kit I have a laptop, so I have my own access. You're also going to want special items for infants, elderly, or disabled family members. Does he need a walker? You have a walker. Diapers, formula. Playing cards. You must have a deck of playing cards for those times of your relaxation and get away from things. Refocus your mind. Some type of books to read and pass some time. Now, what I recommend is you get electronic copies of e-books. You can put them on your thumb drive and your external hard drive, and they're easy to carry. And this way it gives you some time and a variety of choices. Also, writing utensils and notepads. People find documenting what they're going through as a way of coping. So that is very important, writing utensils and notepads. Also, a good tent for sleeping in. I recommend a two-person tent for each individual. They're cheap and easy to carry. Plus, if one fails, you can always bunk up with somebody. A mess kit. You need to know how. You have to have utensils to eat your food with. Toothbrushes. Include baking soda or salt to brush with. And don't forget dental floss. A good pocket knife. Basic sewing kit, needle and thread. And a handful of disposable lighters and matches. They're easy to carry and they are invaluable. There are so much more items to consider to list here in the broadcast. So, what I'm recommending is you go to hesafety.org for more details and ideas. We'll be updating that list every time something changes or we get a new idea. And like I said before, it is a suggestion, not gospel. You need to make your own decisions. But we will give you suggestions and lists of what you need to look at, and you make your own decisions.
This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operations Team. Preparing one person, one community, and one country at a time. Providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support for the healthcare and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hotam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier.
I'm here today with Mandy Beal of HotTeam.org. She's here to talk about a little bit about her organization with us and give us some information. Can you tell me a little bit about your organization, Mandy?
Hi, I'm the Program Director for Health Operations Team, Inc. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and our focus is providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support for healthcare, community healthcare, and emergency preparedness planning, and that will be both domestic and international. Currently, we're focused on the domestic part, and currently the program we have up and running is our emergency preparedness planning.
Okay, so you only have emergency planning right now?
We do emergency preparedness planning at the moment. We are working on getting a free healthcare clinic going in Georgia as well. So, but that is still in the planning phases, and the emergency preparedness program is already up and running. So that's what we're focused on at the moment.
Now, with your emergency preparedness, do you give classes out on it, or?
What we do is we try to connect with community groups, churches, homeowner groups, different places like that. Right now I've been working in assisted living facilities, and we go out and we speak on emergency preparedness planning. We kind of gear it towards whoever we're speaking with, like at the assisted living facilities, we gear it towards seniors. And we just try to educate them on what they need to know to be fully prepared, that is get a kit, get a plan, and stay informed, and we try to teach them how to do that specifically geared for them.
Now, I have reviewed your website, and I've noticed that you say something about free emergency kits to qualified individuals. Now,
yes.
What qualifies an individual for a free emergency kit?
Emergency kit? We have identified three groups that are in need. Those are senior citizens, disabled, and economically disadvantaged. And what we are going to do is try to give out 100 free 7-day two-person kits every quarter. That's our goal. Some kind of think it's a lofty goal, but that's our goal. And we are actually kicking our first fundraising drive for that goal on the 7th of January. And we're doing it at a senior citizens facility, center. Sorry. And they are letting us kick it off with a presentation on emergency preparedness planning for seniors. And then we're going to donate 10 kits to seniors that are there. And then we're going to kick off our fundraising goal to raise enough funds to, by the end of the quarter, donate another 100 kits.
Now, is this just for people in local area of Georgia, or is this
nationwide? No, this is nationwide. We're hoping to take this nationwide. We're starting locally where we're at, and we hope that it will grow nationally.
Well, you got the right
audience. Our goal is to see all prepared.
Mandy, you mentioned a 7-day supply kit. You know, Common Sense Preparedness recommends building a 7-day supply kit. What are your thoughts on that idea?
As you know, and have said on your show, 70% of Americans are not prepared for the event of a disaster or an emergency. We believe that the focus should be on 7 days, not on 3 days. That kind of makes us stand out a little bit different. I think one reason that the government and other agencies have only focused on the 3-day is because that number of actual Americans prepared is so low. But eventually we know, as disaster workers, which is what I am, that 7 days is what really needs to be the focus. It may take us to get to everybody affected in a disaster up to 7 days or longer. We saw in the storms in the Northeast recently, it was over a week with people without power. The saddest thing is a loss of life due to the basic necessities not being met. So, again, our focus is 7 days. So our highlighted kit is a 7-day, 2-person kit. When we go out and speak to organizations and groups, we focus on helping them prepare for 7 days, have a plan for 7 days.
Personally, I've seen in my experience, 3 days is not enough. 3 days, you're still in the emergency. Seven days is when you pretty much know what's going on and where to go.
Exactly, and that's what we see all the time.
Is there any more organizational goals that you might have?
Some of our organizational goals that we have been trying to put together, again, the 100 kits every quarter is what we'd like to see go out. We'd like to work with different area groups, like we're working with the One Senior Center, to get kits out to seniors this next quarter. We'd like to work with groups for those that are disabled or those that are economically challenged, low income, so that we can see that the people that really are in need get the kits. One thing we do is we do sell kits on our website, but they're at cost. The goal for that is that even if you can afford it, we still want to make it as affordable as possible, and we got permission from our manufacturers to do so. Another thing that we do is a program called Pennies for Preparedness. Simply, you just save your pennies and other coins, and you encourage others you know to do the same, and then send them into Health Operations Team. 100% of the donations go towards our Emergency Preparedness Planning Program, which is us going out and speaking and doing presentations and purchasing the kits for those in need. So that's a goal of ours. We also have recently come up with another goal to work with builders, realtors, and insurance agents, and see about getting kits, the 7-day two-person kits, put into all new homes built, insured, or sold as a way of a standard practice, starting a standard practice that with every home, you know, built, sold, insured, gets a kit, just kind of like with the smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors. We want to make this a standard. It shows that they care about their clients, not only at that moment, but their future as well.
Yes.
That definitely should be.
How would my listeners be able to contact you?
Through our website, which is www.hoteam.org, or they can call us at 678-431-8914, and we'd love to speak to anyone interested in becoming a part of HOT, which is Health Operations Team, or donating to us, or seeking help from one of our programs. We're interested in talking to all.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I will be putting up a link on my website to you guys.
Thank
you.
So
you can also visit hesafety.org.
For more information, I really would like to thank Ms. Beal for taking the time to inform us that there is an option to get a 7-day two-person kit at relatively low prices through her organization. You will hear, anytime you do any kind of research on preparedness, everyone talks about a 3-day kit. Prepare for 3 days. Prepare for 3 days. Well, it's been my experience, and as you can hear from Ms. Beal, her experience also, 3 days is not enough. You need to be prepared for 7 days. Because it usually takes up to a week for emergency agencies to get to you to provide assistance. So you have to prepare to be on your own for 7 days. Now, the first 24 hours is the critical hours where the injured and the living and the dead are being separated. So you have to do your first aid, count for everybody within the first few hours of any incident, but then you're going to have to sit and wait because emergency agencies will be overwhelmed at this point, trying to do mass casualties, set up triages, emergency gathering points, and shelters. It will take up to 7 days for the emergency agencies to be able to get to everybody affected by a disaster. So be prepared to be on your own for 7 days. So if you're looking at the 3-day kits, you're going to have to buy two of them. Or you can go for a 7-day kit. If you check out HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness at csp.hesafety.org, you will find that we do have a recommended supply list, and that is based on a 7-day supply list. Well, that about does it for this episode of Common Sense Preparedness. I would really like to thank Mandy Beal for taking the time for the interview, and everyone else who's helped put this program together today. Thank you for tuning in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness, an American Readiness Program. We may be found at the web at csp.hesafety.org. Remember, a wise man prepares for the darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Tune in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness.